Hi, everybody.
It's Belle. I'm here with Pete. Say hi, Pete.
Hi, Belle. You seem a lot less devastated than I feel like you should be, considering what we're about to get into. I just want to say it.
Don't be fooled. When the incident that we are about to speak of happened, I literally screamed, went, no, and then burst into tears. I've had some time to process. I'm genuinely afraid to show this episode to my mother because that is her favorite X-Men character, male X-Men character of all time. And so she hasn't seen the last two episodes and has no idea what's about to happen. And I just told her straight up, please don't watch these without me. I need to be in the room with you when this happens, because I don't think you're going to be able to deal with this by yourself. Mm-hmm. So let's get into it.
Yeah. So X-Men 97.
Yeah, baby.
Has been a ride.
Yes.
And, you know, for those who, I don't know, have been living under an X-Men rock, on Disney Plus, we got, you know, a continuation that I don't know, I feel like that no one asked for and everyone wanted. Like, it was on everyone's wish list, but I've never heard anyone talk about it up until, like, all of a sudden it was like, oh, hey, did you know there's going to be a continuation of the X-Men series that, like, basically defined the freaking 90s? And it dropped, you know, about a month ago? And... you know, this like rollout of episodes for us has been like a Saturday morning cartoon, watching all over again. But with this latest episode, everyone started saying like, you cannot wait. You have to watch it now. Watch it right now. And it was a lot. But this whole season's kind of been a lot.
I feel like this season was such a wonderful slow build. The first two episodes, things were popping off. Absolutely. It's the X-Men. There's always going to be some nonsense happening. But it was things that the X-Men have dealt with and faced and overcome before. And so it didn't seem like, it was like a slow build. It's like, it was almost like, hey, we're coming to get you guys back into the rhythm of this show. We're going to ease you in so that you are lured into a false sense of security. And then episode 3 drops. And then from that point on, everything goes to shit. And that's the only way I can explain it. It is literally from the moment, and this is going to be a spoiler episode. We have to talk about it. From the moment Storm gets shot, every single thing goes straight to hell from that point on. So you get this episode, this latest episode, where I have not, as I said online, I haven't cried this hard about a fictional character since Loki got stuck in that damn tree. I am so upset. But before we get into the most recent episode, let's talk about what's happened on the series so far. Mm-hmm. So X-Men 97 picks up with about a month and a half after the death of Charles Xavier. And technically, mm-hmm. it's not a death. He goes with the Shi'ar Empire because Henry Gyrick shot him. And Gyrick is a known mutant hater in the comic books. And one with enormous political and military backing and power. And he shoots him, and it's a wound that they do not have what is necessary to recover from on this planet. Mm-hmm. And so Lalandra, the queen of the Shi'ar Empire, and I'm going to say about half and half between her and Moira MacTaggert, is Charles's one true love. I can't, there are days where I'm like, it's Moira, and days when I'm like, it's Lalandra. It could go either way. Takes Charles's body to save him. And even then, it's not a fail safe. It's not guaranteed he's going to make it.
Right.
She basically has to put him in stasis and hope for the best. And so we pick up after that, and the X-Men are not falling apart, but they are looking to in some ways move on with their lives. They're still grieving. Cyclops is
a
being
mess.
weighed. He's a mess. He's a mess. He's being weighed down by the chains of commanding. You know, there's a reason they say heavy is the head that wears the crown. This is the, for those who haven't read the comics, at this point, this is the second father that Cyclops has lost. Because we, as we talked about in a previous podcast about the worst dads in comic book history, there's Corsair, and he's garbage. And so, so Cyclops is got a baby on the way with Jean Grey. And Jean, or should I call her Jean, wants to leave the X-Men. Not that she wants to leave them because they will always be her family, but because she doesn't want her child being raised in a situation where they will always be targeted. And that there's a chance, and literally the school in the comic books, hell, on the show, gets destroyed at least once a year. At one point, it was, well, let's see what's going to get destroyed this time. Is it going to be the Avengers Mansion, the X-Men headquarters, or the Hall of Justice for the Justice League? Which is it going to be this year? Because it was a given that one of those three, if not all three of those locations, were going to get wrecked in the comics for a long time. And Jean rightfully goes, I would like to raise our child in a way where they're not being targeted. Especially if it turns out that they are passing, which is one of the things that this show has dealt with really subtly and very well, which is people who can pass wherever, however you want to take that, and them trying to decide, am I standing with my people or am I going to go the slightly easier path? And so you have this situation going on. Then you have the bombshell that happens at the end of episode one, which is that Charles left the school, the contents of the school, and a good amount of his fortune to Eric Lyncher, aka Magneto. And so that throws a monkey wrench into everything as well, because now Cyclops feels he can't leave because he doesn't trust Magneto. And it's very much a, I respect you. I respect what you believe in, but I don't trust you as far as I can throw you. So you have that happen. You have things like, we get to see, and in this show, they did in the first two episodes of this series, a better job of showing just why Cyclops and Storm are the leaders of the X-Men and have been and will always be the leaders of the X-Men than the entirety of the Fox film franchise, period. Honestly, they did such a great job of showing that both of them, Storm definitely, and Cyclops to a lesser extent, are Omega level threats, that they can and will could destroy nations if they wanted to, and that the only thing that has kept them from being, you know, Wubies, destroyers of worlds, are their own consciences, as well as basically the way they were raised by both their biological parents and then their parents of the heart in Charles Xavier. And so you see that, and you see the power that those two specifically have, and to see it systematically get either chipped at or taken away completely is devastating. And it's such a slow burn to watch them fall apart the way that they do, where Cyclops starts to really lose it emotionally, and then Storm is almost murdered. She doesn't die, but she's murdered because she took a bullet that was meant for Magneto, which also just recently happened in the comics as well. And that takes away her powers. Is it permanent? We don't know. But it definitely is a shift in her entire worldview. It's like someone who before an incident, they were able to see. And now not only can they not see, they can't touch or smell. All of their senses have been taken away. That's what it was like for Storm to lose her powers. Because she is so intimately connected to the Earth and the planet that her powers being gone means that she can't even interact with the world the way she did from infancy on. So, you know, me, the dumb, innocent woman that I was, yes, the dumb, innocent young woman I was, thought, okay, this is terrible, but maybe we'll get going forward. We will get like how she gets her powers back and Cyclops reconciling with Jean, because come to find out, that ain't Jean. At some point, Jean was switched with a clone of her who chose the name Madeline Pryor for herself, which is exactly what happens in the comic books. Well, not quite, but close enough for government work. And so the
Well,
woman
like I
that
said, it
he had,
hits a lot of the same notes, right? Like
yeah.
you have like the jealousy, the like fighting, like it just, but it wraps up so quick.
But then it doesn't.
Well, yeah, I was say, but the
Yeah.
Madeline, the like, you know, the mystery of it, what's happening, and like having two genes and all that. We have that storyline where, you know, obviously it's at the hands of Sinister because he's back. So I'm like, oh man, Sinister's back! Like we're gonna have like a whole thing. With you know with Jean, the two Jeans and Sinister and everything, and I just had no idea that that was going to take a complete backseat. Oh, there's something even bigger around the corner. Oh my God. Okay, what is it?
Well, that's the beauty of it, right? For those of us who grew up reading these books and for watching the television series, we think we know what's going to happen. And they tweak it just enough that it makes complete sense, but also we have no idea what's coming next. We can guess, which is what we're going to do at the end of this podcast, but we don't quite know. Of course, Madeline has the baby. The very specific one, which is Nathan Summers, aka Cable. And because it is Sinister and he is the worst, he infects Cable with the techno-organic virus, which is one of the reasons why Cable ends up in the far future as opposed to in as he does in the comic books, because the only place that he can be cured of the virus is in the future. The only technology that's available is in the technology from Bishop's time period. So we have the devastation of Madeline and Scott lose a child. They find out that their entire relationship, they don't even, neither one of them knows. They knows that they know enough to know that for 9 months, that was Madeline Pryor, but they don't know before those specific 9 months who was Madeline Pryor and who was Jean Grey, because they don't know when the switch happened. So again, all of this is terrifying, and as you said, you feel like, oh man, this is huge, it's huge, oh, they're going to do these things, and then they switch on us.
So, can I tell you something about the opening scenes in the X-Men have just been like, well, everything that's been going on, because we also had the sort of side quest of Jubilee, that was so much fun. But obviously, you know, we're talking about this big one episode. But it'll tell you 2 episodes back, you're right, episode 3, just a little subtle thing happens with Rogue and Magneto, where I'm like, oh, that's a wait a minute, something's going on. And from that point forward, I was like, I have no idea what X-Men is going to do to me. And yeah, sure enough, here we are now.
Well, it's funny you should say that, because I remember as soon as I saw it, and I was like, oh, we're going there? Okay. Okay, because for those of us who grew up with the comics, I knew about that relationship. I knew. And I was wondering if they were going to, especially with him living in the mansion. I'm like, how they can't not deal with it. And they did, which leads us to the most recent episode. So Magneto in the comics and in the show created Genosha, which is an island for mutants where they get to be left alone. And as I said to Ron when we were watching last week's episode, it's funny because it reminds me of real life things like Tulsa and Rosewood. When people of color in real life or mutants in the comics, say, okay, bet. How about this? How about we take ourselves off the playing board? We go and find our own place. We found our own place, and we don't take nothing from you. Leave us alone. And so you don't have to worry about us because we'll wipe ourselves out, right? Because we're so inferior to you. And what happens almost every single time is actually, no, we thrive when we're left alone. And here come these supremacists who then, because we're thriving, come to attack. And not only just attack, they come to wipe us out and steal our shit that we earned, that we built. And so Genosha is the mutant equivalent of Tulsa. We have this beautiful place that was a, that is a combination of both what Magneto wanted and what Charles wanted. A place where mutants can be free. They can leave if they want to and be a part of the outside world. But if they don't, that's fine. They have a thriving economy. They have a thriving art scene. They have all this beautiful stuff. And just like in real life, here come these freaking pieces of shit. And they attack them on what should have been a celebration. And Magneto, once again, and they did such a great job of having him have flashbacks to the concentration camps that he grew up in. And oh, it just hits different. It hits different. And Magneto sacrifices himself to save as many as possible. And that sends Rogue, who has had a past relationship with Magneto. And while she realizes over the course of the episode that while she will always love him, she is not in love with him anymore, it sends her into a tailspin where she almost basically suicides by Sentinel. And then our boy, Remy LeBeau, steps in and saves her and everyone else who's still alive on that island. And I don't even want to describe it. It is one of the most epic things that's been put to film and animation. It felt like, for those who watch anime, it felt like it was something out of Naruto towards the later episodes. It was such a badass moment. It was so Remy. I think that's the best way to put it. It was so Remy that he used all of the good in him to destroy this unbelievable evil. And the part that devastates me is that he died thinking that Rogue had chose Magneto over him. And she didn't. So this episode was the parallels between in real life, both past and currently, the writing, the callbacks to everything that happened in the comic books, and the situation that happened in the comic books was so devastatingly well done that it was brutal, and it's going to stay with me for quite some time. It was just an extremely well done episode. The build to it over the previous four episodes was so well done. And this is a side note before we get into where it's going, but I also really appreciated that they took the time, and they have been taking the time all season actually, to show the difference between the toxic masculinity of Wolverine and the grown ass man, big dick energy of Gambit. And what I mean by that is Wolverine is over 100 years old and still acts like a teenage boy with a crush with Jean Grey. Every version of Jean Grey, whether it's Madeline or Jean. Instead of walking away from the situation or being upfront and making a play. Remy, when he and Rogue finally have the discussion about they finally put all their cards on the table, no puns intended, about what's going on between her and Magneto, because she wasn't honest with him. He didn't know that they had any kind of previous relationship. He goes, I love you. And I love you enough to step out of this. Let you make your choices about what you want to do. I really appreciated that because it's very subtle. And it's really, in all honesty, it's only until you watch all five episodes back to back that you really see what they're doing with that. It was really thoughtful and well done, and which makes the ending of this episode even more brutal. So, that being said, Pete, where do you think we're going? I know where I think they're going, but I want to hear what you have to say.
Well, it's been interesting because just to jump back, you know, the thing that these later episodes, because, you know, we see Remy start to figure things out and, you know, it hasn't come out. So he's just like extremely frustrated. And to me, I would have liked for him to be more of like a walk away kind of guy when it comes to Rogue, only because like she had been hiding this from him and the decision she makes has so much more weight, you know, than just, you know, like, yeah, then like the romantic implications, but it doesn't actually make it better. To me, it almost makes it worse. But I did think it was extremely mature because you could see Magneto, who's already been a villain, right, as even more of a terrible person, because we all love the Rogue Gambit relationship, right? That's one of our favorite things. It's a staple of the 90s. And so there it was such smart writing that they were able to make Magneto sympathetic to the end. And you were able to see Rogue and why she made the decisions she made and even why she hid it. You know, like there was nobody who could really be in the wrong. And like you said, Gambit, who, you know, just makes it so much easier to be like, you know, I'll always be your friend. But also like, we're not doing this anymore. Like he gets to set his own boundaries, like you said, by doing that. And then we see like he delivers, because, you know, Magneto does his best to save her. Like, you believe in Magneto again. I feel like the comic book, or sorry, this season has done what the comic books often don't do and the cartoon really couldn't do, which is make you feel sympathetic for Eric. We forget that he's not just Magneto, like, you know, super villain, but like every, you know, Marvel villain, especially those, you know, that, you know, the more important X-Men villains in particular, except for Sinister, who sucks. Like there's a spark of humanity too. There's a spark of like sympathy you have to have, you know, from Juggernaut on, you know. And so to see that Magneto would absolutely not let like the Morlocks, you know, perish, you know, as long as he had air in his lungs, you know, like him, you know, just, you know, saying you have nothing to fear, and like you believe it. Even and even though like 5 minutes ago I'm like, well, you know, I'm like, Magneto's terrible and he's, you know, he's trying to position himself and, you know, take over the world, and then you see him like sacrifice himself. He didn't have to do any of that. He was always going to be there to save, to protect mutants, and he lived up to that word. And then immediately, as soon as he's gone and Rogue, you know, snaps, you have Remy there to be like, I've got your back. Like, okay, we're going over there to kick some ass. Let's go over there to kick some ass. And then all of a sudden, you're right, it becomes an anime. Like the whole thing just becomes, it's shot. Like it I feel like there's a transition that we haven't even been noticing of it just becoming, and not just in the style that kind of creeps in and around the edges until you realize, oh man, this thing is really inspired by anime. It's the fact that like it's the maturity. And so it leaves me now, I'm in a place where I'm not as familiar with the comics and I'm not as familiar with where the story could be going. So I have no idea where the story is going. I just know that like I've been kind of in shock up to this point. And even with the things that I knew were happening, you know, it's as closely based as this cartoon has been, always been, to the comic books, it always has taken some liberties too of trying to, of telling those stories in a slightly different way or with the cast of characters that we have. And this is no different.
One of the major things that happened in this episode, and again, the build has been slow, was Cyclops finally completely verbally losing his shit.
Oh, right. I forgot that even happened.
He
that was such a
read,
huge thing.
It was so good, and he read them, he read humanity for filth this episode. And one of the key things, there were two phrases that happened in this episode that stood out to me. One was Magneto, a promise was made. So you have Eric keeping his promise, and then you have the other phrase that became, for me, the pointer of where this is going in the future. And that phrase is, why do I have to explain my humanity to you? Cyclops loses his, he doesn't lose his shit. He just gets fed up. This is a man who, in rapid succession, has lost his pseudo father, has found out that his wife is not who she or he thought she was. His son was infected with a devastating disease, which caused him to be unable to be even alive in his turn. The only reason his son lives is because he gets sent to the future away from him by the man who is obsessed with him. So on some level, he has to have some guilt that because Sinister is obsessed with the Summers brothers, that this brought Nathan to his attention and brought Jean to his attention. And that is why Sinister was specifically looking to kidnap Scott's child. You have before, and that's before the end of the episode. That's just the things that had happened up until this point. We have his best friend get shot and lose her powers. And he is obviously reeling. So this, he finally absolutely calls humanity out. So because of that, I suspect that we are going into our Cyclops was right era.
And is that the, like, Avengers versus X-Men era?
That
are we
is,
jumping that far forward, you think?
I think we're going to start with Schism, which is when Quentin Quire returns, look him up, kids, as a teenager. And everybody freaks out, and Scott's like, give him a chance. Basically, the entire era, from the Schism era of the comic books up until Avengers versus X-Men, and then Inhumans versus X-Men, was, and this is my own personal point of view, editorial telling us that Cyclops was a madman and he was, you know, out of line and out of pocket, but his actions and everything he's doing is literally to
Be
save,
different.
right, is literally to save people who are on the brink of complete and utter genocide. The events of Schism are preceded by House of M, which is one of the most landmark comic book arcs in the history of Marvel Comics, and maybe across comics period, in which, once again, one of the reasons I don't care for Wanda Maximoff had a mental breakdown, so everybody else had to pay the price. And it led to M-Day, where she says no more mutants, and then mutants all over the planet drop dead or lose their powers. Maybe, I don't know, why they were flying while they were underwater. And suddenly, by the time it's over, only 198 mutants are left on the entire planet. And Wanda, in all honesty, never plays for, in the comic books, causing a mass genocide. Not, she never does. Which, again, is one of the reasons why my distaste for her is so powerful. So Schism is the start of it, where basically Cyclops tries to protect the remaining mutants. And at every turn, the Avengers and Wolverine show up and make everything worse. And then that lead, and every time Cyclops turns out to be right about the call he made earlier on, and they would have had a more peaceful solution and less bodies on the floor had they listened to him from day one. Whether it's Quentin Quire being not should not be held responsible for the things that happened to adult that adult him did, as opposed to this teenager who exists now who doesn't have any of those memories. And turns out, yeah, guess what? He's a good kid. Or one of when the Hellfire Club attacks Utopia, which is the found basically the version of Genosha that Cyclops found. And Wolverine's like, oh, we should run. And Cyclops is like, no, we have to stay and fight, because if we run now, we'd be running for the rest of our lives. And they do. And because of that, they are able to push back against the Sentinels in the Hellfire Club in a way that basically puts them in the dirt. And then we get to Avengers versus X-Men, which is the point in the comic books where I began to actively loathe Captain America. As he basically decides that he is going to kidnap Cyclops' granddaughter, Hope Summers, because she might become the Phoenix. And as you can imagine, it goes poorly. And again, editorial keep trying to tell us that the Avengers are in the right and Cyclops is wrong, but nothing we're seeing, especially anybody who's been marginalized, and nothing that we're seeing is saying that. Cyclops
Steve.
doesn't trust Steve anymore, even though they were really good friends in the comic books. He never trusts Steve again because of the Avengers versus X-Men arc. So I think that that's where we're going because of everything that happened before this episode and then all of the events of this specific episode and him seeing his other pseudo father get murdered by who? Sentinels. Again, why? Because he was minding his business. And then his other very good friend gets murdered, saving others. I suspect that that's where this whole comic book storyline is going. And I want to see how they handle it, because the other thing the show has been doing really well is not pulling back from the adultness of it all. Not in the original 1991, 90, 92, I'm sorry, cartoon, but more often than not, when they adapt things from the comics that are very adult to what to film or television or animation, you get situations like them trying to do Age of Apocalypse in the Fox X-Men universe, and it's garbage. Or you get Civil War, which in the comics was much more nuanced than what we get in the films, and didn't make you understood both sides. You didn't agree with both sides, but you understood. Whereas in the film, it's like, well, okay, sure, I'm being told that I'm supposed to root for this person, but their actions, what I'm seeing is a terrorist. So I'm always leery of when they try to adapt these big story arcs from the comics that are so seminal and almost foundational to who the characters are currently, if they're going to handle it right. So
Well,
far, I'm convinced that they're going to handle it right.
that's the thing is, and in a few short episodes, we're halfway through the series basically, and in a few short episodes, they've got us to the point where I kind of accept anything that they do. I mean, there's things I don't love, and most of it just has to do with I want more of it. I want, a full like 22 episode season or whatever we used to get when we were kids, in part because some of the story has felt so rushed, but they've made the most of the time that they have. They've been moving the plot so much with the time they have. It's like when I watch Invincible, it's kind of the same thing where I'm like, where we started, where we left off, where we started, where we ended up, and somehow in like 22 minutes, It just feels like a lot, sometimes more than an hour-long show does. So it leaves me with a ton of questions. And one of them is, are we going to get more of the Marvel universe, the non-mutant Marvel universe? We've had it sort of creep in, but it's almost like it's barely really there. We don't t we talk about it a little, we see stuff on the fringe. There's, even in the in the 90s cartoon, during the 90s, there were, some like hints and references dropped. But other than like, the appearance of Carol Danvers for like an episode and a half, Captain America for like an episode and a half, it's all been pretty relegated to just X-Men stories. Right. A lot of the way they did the cartoon didn't match up with the comic books because of that, because they left out a lot of non-mutant superheroes and Marvel characters from the X-Men cartoon. And I think there's I wonder what they'll be able to do. Everyone is in love with this X-Men 97, and it's really hard to find things that like aren't really, really superior in the writing, in the action, in the homage to that era. It's been really hard, but it's been really hard to find things that haven't been just kind of awesome. But we still have half a season to go. So, and with the way it's already been moving, I'm like, I don't even know what the central, we had Mojo for an episode,
Yes, which was
and
amazing.
so, which, yeah. So, I mean, and that episode, just that bottle half episode, with Jubilee and her birthday was, I did not expect to like it in the least. I don't like hate Jubilee, but I'm never signing up for like a Jubilee, bottle episode. And then it just sort of happened, and I was like, this is hilarious and awesome, and makes me like the character more. That's, I think, one of the things this series has done so far is make me like or relate to so many characters that I didn't even care about before. But we have like we still have half a season to go.
Well, it's interesting you should say that because about the larger Marvel universe, because if you notice, one of the things it always asks you if you want to skip intro, and I'm like, am I new? No, I'm not skipping the intro.
Right.
Like, what are you talking about?
Every
I
single one has been different. Even
yes.
the previously on X-Men, like, is
Yes.
a fun, like, where, a different person voices each one.
Yes. And so to that point, if you're paying attention to the intro for this show, several characters from the wider Marvel Universe have shown up. In each episode, we get one more of them. We get one more character from, I don't know, the Fantastic Four or the Inhumans or the Hellfire Club before they were officially introduced on the show. Or, and I'm not just talking about into the opening credits of the X-Men show. I'm talking about the Marvel logo. If you pay attention to what's happening in the background, you might see somebody by the name of Ben Grimm. You might see, I don't know, a Spider-Man from a certain cartoon. There's so many, and I'm talking specifically Spider-Man and the Amazing Friends Spider-Man.
Oh,
Remember him
snap.
and his roommates hung
I mean,
out?
how could I? Yeah,
Yeah.
how could I not? This is
Yeah.
my childhood.
So it's very interesting to see how they have been messing with the credits so that I had to go back and watch the credits again, the opening credits, because I was like, wait a dang minute. Has Ben Grimm been there the whole time? Did I miss that? No, he wasn't. He was not. I think that this show is going to go the way of Avengers versus X-Men. And specifically, I think that this is how they are going to tie the X-Men to the larger Marvel universe leading into Deadpool versus and Wolverine. I think that this show is going to basically be the animated version of the events, the lead in to Deadpool and Wolverine, the same way that if you go back and watch Venom, it leads into the Spider-Verse. You gotta stay for the past the credits for Venom, but it directly leads into the very beginning of Into the Spider-Verse. And so I suspect that this show will be doing the same thing, but instead of it going to an animated universe, it'll go to the live action universe and be the setup for the live action version with Deadpool and Wolverine. I think that if they do that, and if they do a good job, because basically Loki gave them a free pass, right? The entirety of the series of Loki allowed them to do whatever the heck they wanted to do going forward. So that is where I think it's going. I do not think, however, that it's going to sideline the X-Men the same way the films did. This show has not done that in the least. And so I trust where they're going. I might not know exactly the twists and turns that are coming, but I have enough knowledge of the comic books that I can see certain things, and I am looking forward to seeing how they play out and how they're adapted. And I am so thrilled because there is something about hearing the most amazing opening theme song to a show in the history of television and film open up. There is something about hearing that music that just sends a thrill down my spine. So I was always going to be here for this show just because this show was such a huge part of my childhood. It was such a influence. The books, these books and these this show specifically was such an influence on the person I came to be. But I'm staying for the fact that not only is it as good as the original show, it's better. And it might be better than, other than Loki and Echo, anything Marvel's put out since Endgame. It's that good. And it's so well thought out and it's so beloved. And I just, you can tell everybody involved loves these characters, sees the shades of gray, no puns intended, with these characters. It's that good. And it's so well thought out and it's so beloved. And I just, you can tell everybody involved loves these characters.
It's just been fun, is all I can really say. It's better than I expected it to be. I expected it to be fun because I feel like why would you do something like this unless you had like something very specific in mind? So I was willing to trust it. It looked like it. It sounds like it. Like they've given me as much of the old cartoon as possible, and then somehow crammed in really good writing, really good action, and just kind of filling in all the little holes and dents that it had in the first run, in its first run, just kind of seamlessly though. Like you don't really notice the things that like that have changed. You just notice the sameness of it, and that somehow, as an adult watching it gives you the same feeling that you watched when you were a kid. And it seemed like, oh, this is really complex, and then watching it as an adult, you're like, oh, this was. You're like, oh, this is also kind of silly and also kind of like shortcutting. And then somehow, yeah, as an adult, it's even better. And so I've enjoyed that.
I just know that I'm probably going to spend the last four episodes a weepy mess. And I am willing to put myself through that because it's so good. And I am genuinely just so happy to see my characters the way they should have been presented on film and television. And it should have taken 25 years to get it right again. But I don't care. We're here now, and I'm living my best life, and that's all that matters. So on that note, this is Belle with a Peter, and we are Pop Culture Uncovered. You can find us at PC Uncovered on Twitter and Instagram and Facebook, popcultureuncovered.com, Pop Culture Uncovered on Tumblr and Patreon, where you can become a patron for as little or as much as you would like. If you enjoy this podcast and you want more, you can go to our podcast on Apple. We are available on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and on Amazon Podcasts. And if you would like to see some of our uncut reactions to things like Scream 1 and 2 and Scream 3, you can go to our Patreon, and for a little amount, you can pledge and get some uncut Scream reactions. Thank you for joining us. We will talk to you later for probably a drunk review of X-Men 97. So you, as the children say, it will be lit. Peace, y'all.